Now we've got Dr. Alexei Muraviev, Head of Department of Social Science Security Studies at Curtin University in Perth, and it's horribly early in Perth, so I apologise, Dr. Muraviev, for ringing you so early, but I was wondering, could you let us throw some light on what's happening with the peace talks and what are the likely outcomes from Astana?
Well, the peace talks were effectively a result of the capture of Aleppo by Assad forces, with assistance coming from the Russians, the Iranians, and Lebanese-based Hezbollah militant group. And that resulted in I won't describe it as a game changer, but certainly in a significant reconfiguration of the balance of forces in Syria. The capture of Aleppo was a major dividend for the Assad regime, because it's Syria's largest city, the business capital, and strategically important place to control, and seriously weakened the Syrian opposition, including the so-called moderate opposition, which is backed by the West and a number of Persian Gulf or Arabian Gulf regimes. And that really triggered the need to have negotiations. Both parties would be probably interested in them. Assad doesn't want to prolong the civil war because his country and his regime and forces loyal to him are seriously weakened, though he can continue to fight, but not for probably too long, particularly without any external aid. The Russians are very interested in the talks because they don't want to be involved in Syria in the same way they were involved in Afghanistan back in the 1980s. More importantly, in late last year, Russia and Turkey, another participant in the conflict, began or reinstated collaboration after Turkey apologized for downing the Russian bomber in November 2015, and that also contributed to the discussions and the need to have a discussion between the ruling regime in Damascus and the moderate opposition.
And Turkey is going to be at the peace talks?
Sorry?
Turkey is going to be at the peace talks?
Well, Turkey may be sending observers to the peace talks, but they were part of the deal breaker between Russia, effectively Iran, and the two warring sides. Though early this year, the opposition, Syrian opposition, said that they may not be prepared to be involved in peace talks because, again, the loss of Aleppo have seriously weakened them and strengthened the positions of Assad. So he will now talk to them from the position of strength rather than from the position of trying to strike a deal that would satisfy both sides. However, he may be pressured by the Russians to do so because, again, I think it's in the interest of Russia and Turkey is interested in that as well, to see some sort of easing of tensions between the moderate opposition and Assad, with a name for all of them to start focusing on fighting ISIS, because up until now there was more of a fight between forces loyal to Assad and forces loyal to the so-called moderate opposition, rather than real emphasis on fighting the IS. And that obviously is becoming number one priority for all the parties involved, because the defeat of IS would then bring, if not the end to the conflict, but certainly is the threat coming from the Middle East.
And did the opposition include then the Al-Qaeda allied groups?
No, because the directive and the overall not supervision, but certainly overall control of the talks is being managed by the Russians, the Turks, and the Syrians, and all of these parties are very pedantic about not including anyone they consider to be affiliated either with former Al-Qaeda or the IS or ISIL. It only involves parties that have either links to the West or to some regimes in the Gulf area, for example, Saudi Arabia, Qatar. So there is an attempt to effectively partially recognize their position that is backed by the West, because up until effectively now, the Russians certainly made it very clear that they don't distinguish between what we describe as moderate opposition and the IS. And sort of also is any criticism that the Russians and the Iranians are more focused on defeating enemies of Assad rather than fighting ISIS in Syria.
So it's more about getting a more of a united front against the extreme groups like ISIL and the Al Qaeda allied people.
That's one of the objectives. Another objective is obviously paving way for a political settlement of the civil war in Syria. I think the Russians certainly are quite pragmatic that Assad will not be in power for long, and they want to achieve the transition. They were actually assisting the some sort of discussions between Assad regime and the opposition over the past year and a half. And some of these discussions took place in Moscow. Some of the discussions took place in Geneva and as well as in other places. And they want to talk to the moderate opposition, but they want to talk to them on their terms. They don't want to see their interest in Syria compromised, because they just struck a deal with Assad to secure two military bases there. They want to see their economic interests preserved in Syria. They want to see their influence preserved in Syria. But they're paving way for the transition to the post-Assad Syria, but as I said before, on their terms. And that's another reason why Astana, the capital of Kazakhstan, Russia's close ally, has been chosen, because this Central Asian country, on one hand, is closely affiliated with Russia, but on the other hand, is trying to play a more balancing game in broader Eurasia and the near and Middle East. So,
are they setting themselves up as the Switzerland of the Eastern Bloc?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as describing them that. I think they're trying to sort of be the moderator between certainly post-Soviet space, some elements of Europe and China. They use their geography as a sort of a meeting point, but calling them.
But they're a Muslim country too, aren't they?
To an extent, yes, though the regime is fairly secular and they're increasingly concerned about the rise of extremism in the country. So compared to other former Central Asian republics, I would consider them to be fairly secular. But there is certainly a threat coming from extremist right, including organizations like Hizbut Tahrir that has a fairly strong presence in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, and so do you think then that Assad is really in a strong position now, isn't he? So how likely is he to give up power?
Well, I wouldn't say he is in a strong position. He is
stronger.
In a stronger position, yes. Mm. Well, I don't think he has much of a choice, because without foreign support coming from Russia and Iran, Assad has no future. I think he understands that. Whether he is prepared to formally admit it, that's a bit a different story. But because of his almost complete dependence on the foreign aid, foreign military assistance, I don't think he has much of a choice. He is more, I think, willing these days to sort of have a bit of time in his office than achieve peaceful transition, perhaps an honorable exile either in Russia or in some other place. Maybe he would migrate to Iran rather than wait for someone to oust him and perhaps even trial for crimes that his regime has committed. So I think he understands that he doesn't have much of an independent voice, because even victories that his forces achieved were very much driven by the support he has continued to receive from the Russians and the Syrians.
Well, I mean, he's got an English wife. Could he perhaps ask for asylum in the UK?
Well, I don't think that would be the case because, yes, on one hand, that was one of the reasons why the West was talking to Assad, because they believed that he was very much a pro-Western sort of values guy. But, I mean, given the way how the West looks at him and considers his regime to be if not criminal, but certainly illegitimate, there is no chance for him to try his luck by trying to find a comfy place somewhere in Western Europe or anywhere else.
And do you think that these talks will perhaps be a bit of a new dawn for the Syrian problem, or do you think it's just another set of talks?
Well, I think it really demonstrates that that there is a possibility of a new newly formed alliance emerging, Russia, Turkey, Iran. They may be able to strike deal concerning balancing their interests and reducing tensions between parties that affiliated with them, and that may bring some sort of relative stability to parts of Syria. But there are too many parties involved in the game. There is a Western-backed coalition. There are Gulf states that play their own game. There are completely independent players on the ground in Syria. We haven't even discussed the Kurdish problem perhaps will also be discussed at those talks. And obviously, Kurds in this sense play into different fields. The Russians can support the Kurds similar to the way how the Americans do. On the other hand, Turkey has a massive security challenge with the Kurds, and to less extent the Iranians. So once again, there may be some breakthroughs achieved with respect to certain groups and certain political military organizations, but there would still be outstanding questions that will have to be discussed involving parties beyond this big three. And that would be the challenge that I think this coalition will have to take up after the Trump administration will be sworn in.
Yeah, and I didn't bring up the Trump factor because that confuses everything even more. So, look, thank you very much, Dr. Muraviev, for giving us a really detailed understanding of what's happening in Kazakhstan with these peace talks. And I suppose all we can do is hope that something at least will come out of it that will help the situation move forward. Thanks very much for being on The Daily with us.
Thank you.